And like all Fridays, we bring in attorney Keith Figured for Do I Have a Case of the Figured Law Group. Keith, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show this week.
How you doing, Rob? Hope you had some nice time with your family, and glad to be back.
Yeah, that indeed. So let's get right to it today. The first one's a little in-depth there. A few years ago, I took a signing bonus for a three-year commitment with a healthcare facility as an MRI technician and left for another job shortly after my one-year anniversary. It has been a year and a half since leaving, and the facility just contacted me to refund the bonus. I can understand it after a short period they could have requested it back, but can they request this after such time has passed? So it looks like they received some sort of signing bonus for a three-year commitment, ended up breaking that commitment, but a year and a half went by before they demanded that money back. So,
all right, so here we have to look at a couple of things. I mean, the first thing is whether or not there was or wasn't a contract. But to determine whether a healthcare facility in PA can recover a signing bonus from an MRI technician, we have to look at, like I said, a couple of things. And that's specifically what I'm going to go through is without a contract, with a contract, if there's a potential contract, and some of the federal laws that may or may not apply. So starting with the scenario with a contract, so if there is a contract, a judge isn't going to go outside the four corners of a contract. Whatever that contract states is going to most likely apply. Now, there are some exceptions. The contract cannot be unconscionable. There has to be clarity, meaning the repayment obligation must be clearly stated, including the amount, conditions for repayment, and any proration formula. Also, pertaining to unconscionable, I think if they try to claim the entire amount as opposed to proration, that might look more as a penalty, and the courts might not side with that. But the bottom line is if there is a contract, they're going to want to bring that to an attorney so that they can go through the contract and see what their applicable rights are. Now, even though it is a year and a half, for purposes of a contract, the statute of limitations in PA is 4 years. So since it's only 1.5 years ago, that means that the facility's claim is still within the statute of limitations, and they can still pursue that if they want to. And the way they would have to pursue that is either by breach of contract. Now, there is a what's called wage payment and collection law. So, but that is specific to earned wages and benefits and does not create a substantive right to compensation like signing bonuses. Where that will come into play later is in the absence of a contract. And then now what I found particularly interesting is that there's Fair Contracting for Healthcare Practitioners Act. Now this was just, looks like 2025, so I don't know if this would be applied retroactively. But that being said, that law, which was effective January 1st, 2025, allows employees to recover reasonable expenses such as relocation, training, or patient-based establishment from healthcare practitioners like MRI technicians if the expenses were incurred within 3 years before separation. So again, you'd have to look at the contract, and if the signing bonus fell under that category and was directly tied to such expenses, that could also potentially limit recovery. And then again, because this was only implemented in 2025, there's a question of whether it would apply retroactively. Now, coming to the second scenario, in the absence of a contract, and under the first scenario, that would be more likely the scenario with the contract that the facility would be able to recover. However, in the absence of a contract, that's going to make it much more difficult. In that situation, basically the facility would have to argue an oral or implied contract. And as I said before, the wage and the WPCL, without a written contract, the signing bonus may be considered earned compensation under the WPCL once paid, especially if no repayment conditions were explicitly communicated. So in the absence of a contract, that in of itself might be able to preclude it. So bottom line is it's probably going to be best that if she did receive that, she takes it to an attorney. If there was a contract, she wants to make sure she has the contract with her. If there was no contract, then she wants to advise the attorney of that. And as I had indicated, again, I don't know if that one act that was just implemented in 2025 would apply retroactively, but if she did have any costs associated that would fall under that and it did apply retroactively, that may also preclude some of the recovery.
All right. On to the next question, and it's these short questions that you scare me the most. Can you explain tort coverage as far as car insurance benefits?
Sure. So in Pennsylvania, auto insurance tort coverage is a critical component of a driver's policy. And the reason for that is it determines their ability to seek compensation for specifically non-economic damages, which is pain and suffering, loss of life's pleasures, those types of damages after, whether it be a car accident in this specific incident, since we're dealing with the tort limitation. But Pennsylvania options as a choice no-fault state. What that means is that the drivers can choose between two tort options, a full tort and a limited tort coverage. Now, the full tort coverage, as it says, full tort grants unrestricted rights to sue an at-fault driver for both economic and non-economic damages. In that situation, there's no injury threshold or anything to prove in order to seek compensation for your injuries. Now, in contrast, limited tort coverage restricts the ability to sue for non-economic damages, which again are the pain and suffering, loss of life pleasures. And the only way you can exceed that limitation is you have to meet what is the serious injury threshold. Now, there are some exceptions in the event that if you do have limited tort is, again, the serious injury threshold. In that specific instance, injuries resulting in death, significant deformity, or serious impairment of bodily function basically need to be proved in order to overcome that threshold. The other exception is drunk driver. If an at-fault driver is convicted of driving under the influence or accepts accelerated rehabilitative disposition, then even if you're limited tort, you can go after them as a full tort election. Uninsured driver, if this driver is uninsured, if it's an out-of-state vehicle, that is at fault and registered outside of Pennsylvania. Commercial vehicle, if you are injured as a passenger in a commercial vehicle, a pedestrian or motorcyclist, unregistered vehicle owners, and I believe children also enjoy unlimited tort protection. That I have to confirm, but I'm pretty sure they do. Now, the one thing that's important to understand about the election, whether it be limited tort or full tort, is that it's protected because you are giving up your rights. So in Pennsylvania, the tort election process is governed under the vehicle code. And under the vehicle code, if you don't explicitly choose an option, then the default option is full tort. And the reason for that is it's to presume you have selected full coverage, which ensures you retain maximum legal rights. Now, in order to waive the full tort, you actually have to be provided a signed waiver, which is required to advise you what you're giving up, and you actually have to sign that. The named insured has to sign that. And in the absence, I've had cases where we've had clients where the insurance company has indicated that the individual selected the limited tort option, but they couldn't select the waiver. So in the absence of them being able to produce that waiver, it reverted back to the full tort. So why would somebody pick a choose the limited tort option? Because it's approximately 10 to 15% savings. But to be honest, that 100 or so in savings isn't really worth the risk. So, I mean, would be my, and I think as most legal experts and law firms overwhelmingly recommend, full tort for most drivers, especially those with families, frequent drivers, or those in high traffic areas, that the small premium savings of limited tort are often outweighed by the risk of uncompensated injuries. So, but if you have any questions, you can also speak with your insurance rep. But I would always recommend that you carry the full tort, given the risks and benefits.
And the final question for today: my business has been negatively impacted by municipal construction, where I have a documented 60% to 70% loss of traffic into my store. I understand the need for infrastructure improvements, but there has been delays by subcontractors, which the municipality says is out of their control. Do I have any recourse?
Hey, so this is obviously a complicated issue because you're dealing with the municipality, which has governmental immunity. So really the recourse is going to be they're between the municipality or the contractors. The issue with the contractors is, and I'm assuming he's not a party to the contracts, which means he lacks privity in order to go after those contractors, and it's unlikely he would have recourse. So the only potential recourse that he may have is if he can pursue one against the municipality. Now, the only potential, now there's a couple, but most of them didn't even come close to applying. The only one that closely applied and could apply, but in this scenario too, now the reduction in 60-70% loss of traffic doesn't necessarily amount to a loss in profits. In any of these recoveries that I'm going to discuss, whether it's under the what is called the inverse condemnation, and then potential insurance claims. There are potential insurance claims, but regardless of the claim, the business owner is going to have to substantiate in documentation an actual loss in profits as opposed to just the loss in traffic. Now, under the inverse condemnation claim, if the construction effectively takes the client's property by denying reasonable access, basically what that is a claim under the eminent domain code. So courts have recognized loss of access as compensable, taking in cases like McCracken, City of Philadelphia, and that was specifically dealing with prolonged construction block business access. However, as I had indicated, in that case, the client had to prove that access was substantially impaired, which in this case they may be able to, but they also must quantify the profit losses and show the impairment was more than temporary inconvenience. And the problem here is, being that that's a contract and it is going to be temporary, that's probably going to be between proving the profit losses and the fact that it's not a permanent inconvenience as opposed to a temporary are going to be the two, I think, roadblocks that they have to overcome. So, but that being said, the only potential other way to pursue is through the insurance, and there are what's called insurance claims for business losses under business interruption insurance. The problem with that is that it usually only covers peril, which is like fire, flood, or actual physical damage. Civil authority coverage, now that is one area that there may be a possibility for coverage. And the reason for that is it covers losses when government action, such as road closures, restrict access. So in this instance, they would want to review their policy and take that to an attorney, and they would need to evaluate whether or not they could substantiate any of these claims, whether it be against the municipality or potentially under some insurance that they may have.
All right, Keith, if someone wants to get in touch with you and may have a question offline that they don't want made public, how can they do that?
They can contact me directly at 570-954-9299. They could send me an email through, they could send me an email at keith@figuredlaw.com, or they can contact me through my website at figuredlaw.com.
All right, and if you have a question you want featured on a segment of Do I Have a Case, you can email me at rob.odonnell@odyssey.com, and we'll be sure to get those questions to Keith on a future segment. Keith, you have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us this week.
You as well, Rob. Always a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners.
All right, thank you.